offering a loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. And we are here to continue and complete the fifth discourse in the series that we're going through. That's the 1991 summer course series. If you've been with us for the past couple of weeks, it's a discourse which is on the Keno Upanishad. As I said, we'll be concluding it this week. We've got the last part to play, but before that, probably to start with a short summary of what we heard last time in Swami's discourse, and to continue this week's episode, I offer my humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet and invite Hari to join all of us. Saram Hari.
Saram, Saram Hari.
So I think the last week, the clip which we played was primarily on the importance of controlling the tongue.
The tongue, yes.
Where I think, as we said, you know, in the discourse, as we were seeing, Swami speaks about how you understand the role the senses play, and the inquiry that you have to do into the senses as such, and how that will lead you to this point where a better understanding of the purpose, as Swami coined those three words, you know, karma, karana, and kartavya, all that will come together. Only it starts by this control of the senses.
Yes.
And in that, Swami says the primary is the control of the tongue.
Yeah. Right. Like in one sense, I think Swami is giving us a glimpse of, like, supposing the right karta is identified.
Right.
Right. If you realize who you truly are, then this is how you'll be utilizing your senses. It's like a check. Like, right. Are we, you know, if we are in the right place, you know, then we are doing the right things too. Right. So, right. Swami is giving us the primary example of the tongue, right? There's so many actually in the, like the previous, I think we had to rush through it right at the end, in the last segment. But there were some pretty interesting points that Swami was making.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think one of the things that I recall immediately is Swami giving the example by way of a conversation between Hanuman and Vibhishna.
Right.
There's a completely new perspective in that sense, because I've heard Swami often speak about how the tongue it lives such a dangerous life between such sharp teeth, and so we learn the lesson from the tongue that you know how to be live in such dangerous climes, right? And here Vibhishna is saying this to Hanuman, that I have to live among these demons. And my heart is with Rama, but I have to live among these demons. And he likens it to how his life is like that of a tongue between amidst sharp teeth. And Hanuman, he reminds him that it is the teeth that fall away. It's such a beautiful analogy. And Swami is telling us that, you know, when you stand for something, you stand for the truth, you stand for peace, you stand for it like your whole life.
Right.
No matter what the challenges are, because those challenges will melt away.
Right.
It's a really fantastic takeaway, I think, from the last.
And whenever Swami speaks about the tongue, I think he always emphasizes how, among all the senses, this is the only one which has got a dual duty to perform.
Yeah.
And why it becomes even more important. And it reminded, I think, when sometime in college, I had heard this story from one of the teachers, from the life of Samarth Ramdas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a very great saint, and apparently once he gets alms, I mean, the lady of the house cooks payasam and offers to him in alms when he goes up to the door of one of the households there. So apparently it's very, very good. The payasam is so tasty, and he says that his tongue takes a liking to it. Okay, and that is the beauty of master. They are all the time very, very vigilant about the thoughts in the mind. And even a slight aberration or a slight wavering, they take it very seriously, and they really want to curb it right in the beginning. So he says that the next morning he is able to feel that craving. That, you know, that there is that slight desire of, you know, how nice it would be to get that taste again.
Yeah.
Right? So immediately he calls all his disciples. And he tells them, you go out into the village and get as much milk as possible in alms. Okay, so they get liters and liters of milk. And he says, bring a huge cauldron. And he orders them to make payasam. which seems apparently that full cauldron is filled with paisam. Mm. And then he starts drinking.
Mm.
So he says he's filled himself with the paisam, but he doesn't stop. You know, he continues to drink,
Yeah.
And then he starts puking. He's not able to take it. Still he doesn't stop.
Yeah.
You know, the story goes that he drinks till the point where he falls unconscious because of the nausea and vomiting over and over again. So he says from the next morning he's allergic to the thing. The idea is he's saying that, you know, it's one thing to tell the mind to calm down and things like that, but sometimes, I mean, his method, I'm not telling that that's probably what each one of us should do, but he, that idea of driving it home to the mind, that, you know, that joy that you got from it was so momentary, that if it was absolute, then more of it should give more of joy.
Right.
And I think nothing will teach better than experience.
Yeah. Actually, it reminds me of something that a divine master had once mentioned. It's a conversation between the devotee and the master, and the devotee had this precise question called, which is superior, yoga or bhoga? And he says, like, neither is superior. You'll find that as you look back, that you've gone through cycles of yoga as well as bhoga. Because the soul, he says that there are some, in order to, you know, achieve supremacy over this craving of certain desires, there are some where the soul decides that it can simply cut off, you know, the, but in other cases it compels us to go through the desire, and at some point of time become repelled, you know, that we have had enough, we are sated by it or we are repulsed by it, now we don't want it anymore, and that's done, you know, check it off. Like, so there are different ways of achieving it, like, so in the sense that when this happens, like, spontaneously, we don't realize, but it is taking us through these cycles of yoga and bhoga.
Exactly, but, you know, I was once thinking of why is it taking us longer to get that kind of vairagya nowadays? I think that's because of the variety of choice. Taste, you know, variety of choice, exactly. You know, even when we were children in the early 90s or, you know, late 80s, there was a limit to what you could achieve with even the amount of money you gather.
Yeah,
you know, you could have lakhs and crores of money, but there are only three brands of car you could buy from. Right? That's all we had. You had a Maruti, you had a, you know, Omni or whatever, Fiat. Just the three, four you know, brands which are available. Same thing with everything else, you know, be it shoes, be it t-shirts, until the point where globalization came, 91, and, you know, the reforms happened. And, so there was a limit, but now it's like, you know, you have to get vairagya for each of these brands.
I think the choice is again going to bring in that vairagya.
Yeah, that's the other thing which happens. In fact, Sai Prakash keeps quoting that study one of the people, you know, came up with, one of the psychologists came up with. They said that's the only obvious now, you know, because we're getting so satiated and, you know, filled with this thing. But the next thing is, well, the generations which will come will have a spontaneous, you know, ability to look inward and look at something which is deeper and more subtler than this one. Hopefully,
because
that happens.
The Maslow's hierarchy, if you remember, the needs are now, for most people, like, even if I look at India right now, see the proportion of families which are now able to afford pretty easily, right? Even see, in those times, even if we spoke about middle class,
right,
when we spoke of ourselves as middle class families, the kind of trials we had to still go through, even you know, even with that there's cannot be compared. So now it's a far,
no question of travel, there's no question of you know, air travel and things like that.
The comfort levels are pretty lessened, you know. So it's now very, when I look at the present generation, like those are growing up, say 5 or 6 years old, and I can see that those challenges are not there with them. In fact, one psychologist actually mentioned that because of this, it's, you find a larger number of youth sliding into depression. Because there is, like, very little gap between the satisfaction and the gratification. The desire and the gratification. It's like happening so fast, they're running out of things to look forward to.
Right.
And, you know, that is bringing on this kind of...
This, going back to that same three concepts Swami speaks about, you know, karma, karana and kartavyam. At some level, this karana or the cause, that has got to keep maturing. Like, you know, you could start with probably just the basic necessities of human life. But at some time, that purpose has got to keep maturing with time. Yeah. And when that doesn't happen, and as you're saying, the gap between desire occurring and the ability to accomplish it or fulfill it, with your level increasing in the sense of your economic status increasing, that gap keeps getting lesser and lesser, but the maturity of that karanam or purpose does not happen. So I think very soon you catch up with that, you know, fulfilling of desires, and then that emptiness which.
So you got to create like new games, no, where
exactly
like
right.
something
right.
really meaningful now becomes, you know, the is something that pulls you
right,
towards
right.
itself. And like I'm seeing this, you know, even among my classmates, you know, in from the engineering college and from school, etc. Like I'm seeing that how this kind of what drove them earlier, like up to this middle age, so to speak, right? What drove them now no longer has that attraction. So if they were driven earlier by the needs of keeping their family together or earning a lot of money and that fame and position, now having gotten there, they're like, now what next? And they're not able to see what next.
Right.
They're done with, you know, striving for the increment, striving for promotion. And now they're like, you know, sometimes the conversation drifts towards like, what can I do in life that will bring, you know, meaning to it?
Right.
Can I, you know, get into some charity work? Or it's that kind of conversation where they're done serving themselves. Like, is there something we can do for the society, right? So that is...
Exactly. I think the sooner we are able to... I mean, I always see this as a way forward. Like, suppose you talk of the human mind. I mean, the whole thing is about feeding the human mind, be it with, you know, normal pleasures or with a purpose.
Yeah.
Either feed the mind with both. I mean, and make a balance of that. That's the whole idea. But no, when we talk about the human mind, it's got a biological function for which it has been placed in every human body, and that is self-preservation.
Yes.
Right. And the whole idea is, how much are you able to expand this idea of yourself? You know, when it becomes a partner, it becomes two people. So now when you talk of self-preservation, you're talking about preserving two, this one. And you're talking about a family, you're talking about preserving. And as you're saying, that the ability to provide and protect a family of five or six is achieved quite easily nowadays. Then automatically you find that, you know, what do I do with life? In fact, there was one listener who wrote to us saying that, you know, I'm just finding that I'm not doing enough work for the money I'm being paid. And she says, you know, the projects do come by, and when they come, they keep you busy. But when they're not there, there is so much of emptiness.
Yes.
There's so much of guilt that I'm drawing so much salary from the society, and I'm not able to contribute enough. So that idea of that self-growing all the time. And that's why Swami says, you know, that seva, there's nothing which can give you more purpose than the feeling that your time and your life is worth for more people than yourself. And because the other thing which Swami was talking about when he was talking about the tongue was, we made a mention of that, speak sweetly and speak softly, and
Satyam bruyat priyam bruyat na bruyat satyam apriyam.
And Swami also we also discussed about speak obligingly even if you're not able to oblige. There's one analogy which Swami would say. I mean, I've heard Swami say this, and then I realized that it's a constant analogy, literally, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, and even when we were students. Swami would say that, you know, you have a crow which comes and sits on the roof of your house, okay, and it starts crowing, and you take a stone and you chase it away. Okay, in the same place, a cuckoo comes and sits. And Swami so beautifully, he says, you know, that bird is also black. In fact, that bird is also born and brought up in the crow's nest.
Yes.
Okay, but you don't chase it away. Okay, and then Swami says, the crow did not harm you, the cuckoo is not doing any good for you, but still you like the cuckoo over the crow. It's purely because one is pleasant and the other is irritating. And Swami says, that's the same way, you know, you may or may not be in a position to be of help to others, but the very fact that you speak lovingly and speak sweetly will make so much of difference to the other's life, and you don't realize. I mean, it's so
beautiful
example of that. And the catch is Swami saying that neither one is harming or helping you.
Just, precisely.
You know, just by the sweetness of the way they come, you know, express themselves. But I think we were talking to one of your classmates, Ishrikant. In a conversation we had with him, he was telling about how some things which you learn in Swami's presence, you go out and you practice, and you find that it's so rare in the outside world. And he was telling about, you know, his the apartment which he was living in. It's a gated community. And he has this habit of going for a walk, I think, after dinner or something like that. And you have these 24-hour security in most of these, you know, gated communities. They would have their own ships, and they keep coming and going. So he would get into conversations with all these security people, and you know, they will be from Bihar, some of them will be from Assam, and earning very little, and in that sending back to their home and saving and things like that. So he would just stop by and ask them, you know, have you had your food, and where are you from, and you know, all kind of things. And or when he's driving out in his car, he would just smile at the security man who's opening the gate. So he was saying that he was surprised that one day one of them came to him and said, sir, nobody even speaks to us. You know, forget about speaking lovingly or sweetly. He said, nobody even speaks to us. You know, it makes so much difference to us when you come and speak to us like this. I mean, that's when he realized that when Swami would often say, you know, speak sweetly, speak lovingly, it means so much to people, you know, that we don't realize how important it is.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, one thing is, whether we recognize it or not, the way the entire education system in Swami's schools and colleges, the way they're structured, it orients people that way.
Right.
So most of the, see, we, it automatically cures us of our self-absorption and, you know, our obsession, self-obsession.
Right.
If you look at the Grama Seva, the self-reliance activities, and above all, Swami's constant, you know, is always on this point, right?
That
you got to give up the ego, you got to think of people around you, that kindness. These are the messages that keep, you know, going. And as reminded, like a student who passed out of his MBA, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he was saying that he's in the investment banking sector, and oftentimes, you know, he has to, a lot of things that he has to keep talking to the support staff there.
Okay. Right?
And after some time, you know, he was able to achieve his targets and this and that very quickly. And the reason was that the support staff were giving him a lot of leads, like these are the clients and things like that. And then he came to realize that why that such a beautiful rapport was getting built between them was because he was perhaps the only person in the team who was not treating them shabbily. He was actually speaking to them lovingly, understanding them, you know, as humans, not as some automatons who are serving, you know, like. And they appreciated this, and they came back to him and said, and he says that I never did this, you know, consciously. It came very naturally because of the training that you received here to treat people as people. No?
Right.
It doesn't have to think through that.
I mean, exactly. I think it even comes directly from Swami. Like one of the administrators was once telling, you know, when they were talking to us, they were telling, one of the beautiful thing about the system itself is, you know, you have Swami at the helm of affairs. I mean, he's like the supremo, looking at it from an administrative point of view. And there was equal access to him, you know, be it the vice chancellor who's supposed to be probably, you know, the second highest in the university, or the person who is in the lowest in the rung, you know, somebody who's the gardener in the campus.
Yeah.
I mean, he also could just write a letter and directly approach Swami. And when we see that every day, we see that Swami is treating everybody equally. You know, there are people who say that, you know, seating arrangement is different, and, you know, there are people who are seating above, ministers are given special places. But when you observe Swami during a darshan, you know that from Swami's point of view, that's got nothing to do with him.
Yes.
Like, you know, that seating arrangement or that preference which is given to VIP has got nothing to do with him, because he reaches out equally.
Yeah.
He goes out, and you see him every day, you know, he walks out into the crowd, he speaks to people or even to us. You know, now when we look back, probably we were the least, individuals who mattered least in that scheme of things, you know, seeing from Swami's point of view. But that never came across because of the time which Swami would spend.
Was almost disproportionate.
Absolutely, so disproportionate. Yeah. In fact, you know, Professor Nanjundia says that, you know, when he goes to Hyderabad, Swami takes them along, I think, Shivam inauguration or something like that. And he sees that these VIPs are coming and try to take some time with Swami, and the ministers are waiting outside Shivam to have a word with Swami. But Swami takes these group of lecturers whom Swami has taken along, and Swami is saying that, come, I'll show you my dining hall, I'll show you my bedroom. He says, Swami, what is this? You know, after all, we are lecturers in your college whom you are paying well. No, we are not doing anything, and we are not going to be able to do anything for you. You know, that kind of disproportionate time spending from Swami, that you know that his way of looking at it is completely different and equal. And I think that alone seeps into all of us.
True.
One thing is to be told to be loving, to be told to be equal and obliging. But the other thing is to be seeing it every day and, you know, learning that. So I think we'll go to the last couple of clips in this discourse, and hopefully we'll, not hopefully, we should complete this discourse this week.
Upanishads are the essence of all the Vedas. No one is making the efforts to understand the essence of the Upanishads.
ఇంత చిన్న 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 మాత్రల చేతనే మానవుని యొక్క అనారోగ్యాన్ని దూరం గావిస్తుంటుండాలి.
With such small, small tablets, the maladies of man are removed.
మానవుని యొక్క అజ్ఞానము దూరం గావిస్తుంటుండాలి.
It removes the ignorance of man.
ప్రజ్ఞాన జ్యోతిని ప్రకటింపజేస్తుంటుండాలి.
It kindles the flame of supreme knowledge.
ఇలాంటి విషయం లోపల విద్యార్థులు చాలా జాగ్రత్త వహించి ఈ వయసు నుండి కూడాను
In such matters, students must be very careful and must make efforts to lead sacred lives from this tender age itself. Alongside education, we must cultivate humility too.
ఈ వినయమే లేకపోతే విద్య యొక్క విలువంతా కూడాను కేవలం నిరుపయోగమైపోతుంది.
Without humility, all the value of education becomes futile. Respect parents. Respect teachers. Respect elders. Love the younger ones.
ఈ విధమైన మార్గము లోపల అధిక భాషను కట్టి పెట్టండి. అధిక భాషించు సూరత్వం అధికమయ్యే కార్య సూరత క్షీణించి కరిగిపోయే బ్రతుకు ఆడంబరములాయే.
In this path, try to curb excessive talk. The heroism of excessive talk has increased. Heroism in actions is melting away. Life has become ostentation. Such is the state of a student today. It is because of ostentation that students' lives are strewn on the streets. We cannot give scope for such ostentation. How should we be?
మేఘమును మింటిపై చేరి మెదలుచుండా కాటి దాపున విద్వత్తు వదరునట్టు విద్య వెనుకల జ్ఞానంబు వెలయవలే.
Behind education there should be wisdom. Like when the clouds float in the sky and lightning strikes, behind education, wisdom must exist. Just as how lightning shines amidst the dark clouds, our knowledge must shine as lightning in this world filled with darkness. Merely arming ourselves with bookish knowledge, we must not indulge in arguments. Argumentation is detrimental to education. Only the person who doesn't know much will indulge in arguments. The one who knows everything remains silent. The empty vessel will jump up and down. The leaf that doesn't have anything on it flutters up and down. The leaf on which all delicacies have been served will remain put.
కనుక మనము అన్ని వడ్డించుకున్నటువంటి యొక్క పూర్ణమైన వ్యక్తి వలె మనం ప్రకాశించాలి.
సో వీ మస్ట్ షైన్ యాజ్ ద కంప్లీట్ ఇండివిజువల్ ఆన్ హోమ్ ఆల్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ ప్లేస్డ్.
ఇది ఏ విద్యార్థుల యొక్క భవిష్యత్తునకు సరి అయినటువంటి రాజమార్గం.
దిస్ ఈస్ ద రాయల్ పాత్ ఫర్ ద ఫ్యూచర్ ఆఫ్ స్టూడెంట్స్.
ఈ వయసులో మనలో అహంకారము, అభిమానము, ఆడంబరం అనేటువంటి అమితంగా ఉంటాయి.
ఇన్ దిస్ ఏజ్ there will be an excess of ego, attachment and ostentation. These are the flaws born of food and habits.
కానీ ఆ దోషాలను కూడా కొంచెం పరిహారం గావించుకోవాలి.
బట్ వీ నీడ్ టు నెగేట్ దీస్ ఫ్లాస్ టు సమ్ ఎక్స్టెంట్.
మనం దోషులు కాకూడదు.
వీ షుడెంట్ బికమ్ డిఫెక్టివ్.
పవిత్రులు కావాలి.
వీ షుడ్ బికమ్ సేక్రెడ్.
అది నిజమైన ఆదర్శం ఈనాటికి లోకానికి అవసరం.
దాట్ ఈస్ ద ఐడియల్ ద వరల్డ్ రిక్వైర్స్.
విద్యార్థి లోకం ఏ రీతిగా ఉంటుండాలంటే బయట ప్రపంచంలో చూసినప్పుడు భయంకరంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
When we see the student world in the society outside, it is horrifying.
కానీ మన విద్యార్థులు అభయంకర స్వరూపులుగా రూపొందాలి.
But our students should transform into fearless individuals.
భయపడేటువంటి వారికి అభయాన్ని అందించాలి.
They should give courage to those who are fear stricken.
మనం ప్రేమతత్వంతో అందరినీ ఆకర్షించుకోవాలి.
We need to attract everyone with love.
ఏ విధంగా కూడా మ్యాగ్నెట్ ఇనుమును ఆకర్షిస్తుందో ఆ విధంగా జగత్తునంతా కూడా సమాజమునంతా కూడా మనం ఆకర్షింపచేసుకోవాలి.
జస్ట్ ఎస్ ద మ్యాగ్నెట్ అట్రాక్ట్స్ ఐరన్, వీ మస్ట్ అట్రాక్ట్ ద సొసైటీ అండ్ ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్.
అందరితో కలిసి మెలిసి మెరగాలి.
వీ మస్ట్ లివ్ యునైటెడ్లీ విత్ ఆల్.
దీనిని వేదం నందు నేను చెప్పినటువంటి ఒక శ్లోకము, సహనావవతు సహనౌనక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహే తేజస్వినామని. ఈ యొక్క శ్లోకం ఏమిటి అర్థము?
The same is declared in this verse from the Vedas. What is the meaning of this verse?
Kalasi melasi tirigali.
We must move unitedly.
Kalasi melasi peragali.
We must grow together.
Kalasi melasi telisukunna telivini poshinchali.
Together we must cultivate the knowledge that has been obtained.
Kalasi melasi kalataleka kalimito jeevinchali.
We should live together peacefully without any animosity or enmity.
Idiye lokaniki shanti shanti shanti.
This is true peace for the world.
Kaluka loka shanti manaku kavalanukunnappudu andartona kalasi melasi kalataleka kalimito jeevinchali.
Therefore when we aspire for world peace, we should live with everyone in harmony and without any misunderstanding.
Kalatalu undaradu.
We cannot have misunderstandings.
కనుకనే ఈ ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క భావములు ఎంత పవిత్రమైనటువంటివో మీరు ఒక్కతూరి విచారించాలి.
సో యు మస్ట్ ఇంట్రోస్పెక్ట్ ఫర్ అ మోమెంట్ ఇంటూ హౌ సీక్రెట్ ద ఫీలింగ్స్ కన్వేయ్డ్ బై ద ఉపనిషత్స్ ఆర్.
ఆనాటి ఋషులు తెలివితేటలు లేని వారు కాదు.
ద సేజెస్ ఆఫ్ యోర్ వర్ నాట్ అన్ఇంటెలిజెంట్.
వారు ఈనాటి సైంటిస్టుల కంటే ఎక్కువ పరిశోధనలు చేసినటువంటి వారే.
దే వుడ్ డూ మచ్ మోర్ రీసెర్చ్ దాన్ ద సైంటిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ టుడే.
వారు చేసినంత పరిశోధనలు ఈనాటి వ్యక్తుల్లో వెయ్యింటి ఒక భాగమైనా లేదు.
నాట్ ఈవెన్ వన్ ఆఫ్ 1,000 ఆఫ్ ది అనాలిసిస్ అండ్ రీసెర్చ్ కండక్టెడ్ బై దెమ్ ఈస్ టు బి ఫౌండ్ ఇన్ ఇండివిజువల్స్ ఆఫ్ టుడే.
జీవితమంతా పరిశోధనలు చేస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ఆల్ త్రూ దేర్ లైఫ్ దే రీసెర్చ్డ్ అండ్ అనలైజ్డ్.
ఈనాటి సైంటిస్ట్ చీకట్ రూమ్ లో కూర్చొని పరిశోధనలు చేస్తున్నారు.
సైంటిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ టుడే రీసెర్చ్ సిట్టింగ్ ఇన్ డార్క్ రూమ్స్.
ఈనాటి పరిశోధనంతా కూడా కేవలం బావిలో కప్పల వంటివి.
ద రీసెర్చ్ ఆఫ్ టుడే ఇస్ కంపారబుల్ టు అ ఫ్రాగ్ ఇన్ ద వెల్.
ఆనాటి పరిశోధనలు సముద్రంలో ఉండేటువంటి కప్ప సంచారంగా జరిగింది.
ద రీసెర్చ్ ఆఫ్ యోర్ వాస్ కంపారబుల్ టు అ ఫ్రాగ్ మూవింగ్ అబౌట్ ఇన్ ద సీ.
విశాలమైనటువంటి యొక్క పరిశోధనలు చేస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దే పర్ఫార్మ్ రీసెర్చ్ బ్రాడ్ మైండెడ్లీ.
ఇది స్వార్థము సర్పయోజనంతో కూడినటువంటి పరిశోధనలు.
రీసెర్చ్ టుడే ఇస్ సెల్ఫిష్ అండ్ సెల్ఫ్ సెంటర్డ్.
నిరహంకారంతో కూడినటువంటి పరిశోధన.
దేర్ రీసెర్చ్ వాస్ సెల్ఫ్లెస్ అండ్ ఫ్రీ ఆఫ్ ఈగో.
కనుక ఈనాటి ఋషులను మనం ఏదో ఒక విధమైనటువంటి హాస్యాస్పదంగా ఒక విధమైనటువంటి ఒక పరికమారిన వారి వల్లే మనం భావిస్తూ వస్తున్నాం.
టుడే వి స్పీక్ కంటెంప్చుయస్లీ ఆఫ్ దీస్ సేజెస్ యాజ్ దో దే వర్ ఇన్కాంపిటెంట్.
కాదు 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 కాదు, వారు ప్రసాదించినటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యమైనటువంటి మణులే ఈనాటి మానవత్వాన్ని పోషిస్తూ వస్తున్నాయి.
నో నో, the tenets handed down by them is what is nourishing mankind today.
Kaluka sakala shastramulu kunu madinchi andinchinatundi sudha nijulu ee upanishadulu.
So upanishads are the repositories of nectar that extract and offer the essence of all scriptures.
Kaluka upanishadulu bhavalu chinna chinna vishayalato mana nitya jeevanamlo avasaramainatundi okka margallo vinni pravesha petti divya jeevitanni anubhavincharani nenu aashistu ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ నా ప్రసంగాన్ని విరమిస్తాను.
హోపింగ్ అండ్ బ్లెస్సింగ్ దట్ యు మే అప్లై దీస్ సింపుల్ ప్రిసెప్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద ఉపనిషత్స్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ స్మాల్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ డైలీ లైఫ్ and thereby lead divine lives. I bring my discourse to a close. Tomorrow, we shall take up another Upanishad. All these Upanishads can lead you closer to God. Upa means near. They take you near God.
అదే మొట్టమొదటి మన వైస్ ఛాన్సలర్ కోరారు, భగవంతుని సమీపానికి పోవడానికి తగినటువంటి ఉపాయములు చెప్పమని చెప్పాడు.
దట్ ఈస్ వాట్ ద వైస్ ఛాన్సలర్ రిక్వెస్టెడ్ ఆన్ ద ఫస్ట్ డే. హీ ఆస్క్డ్ ఫర్ ద మీన్స్ దట్ కెన్ టేక్ వన్ క్లోజర్ టు గాడ్.
కనుక భగవత్ నామస్మరణ గావిస్తూ,
దేర్ఫోర్ చాంటింగ్ గాడ్స్ నేమ్,
దివ్యమైనటువంటి జీవితాన్ని పవిత్ర మార్గంలో ప్రవేశపెట్టి ప్రశాంతమైనటువంటి జీవితాన్ని మనము ఆదర్శంగా అందించాలి.
లీడింగ్ దిస్ డివైన్ లైఫ్ త్రూ సీక్రెట్ పాత్స్ వీ మస్ట్ ప్రెసెంట్ యాజ్ అన్ ఐడియల్ లైవ్స్ ఫిల్డ్ విత్ పీస్.
నాటి లోకము లోపల అధికమైపోయినాయి.
ఇన్ టుడేస్ వరల్డ్ అజిటేషన్స్ హ్యావ్ ఇంక్రీస్డ్,
అశాంతి మితిమీరిపోయింది,
అన్రెస్ట్ హ్యాస్ క్రాస్డ్ లిమిట్స్,
భద్రత తగ్గిపోయింది,
security has diminished.
ఇలాంటి సమయంలో విద్యార్థులు ఆదర్శవంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క అభయాన్ని, ఆనందాన్ని, భద్రతను చేకూర్చాలని నేను ఆశిస్తున్నాను.
I aspire that in such times students must lead ideal lives and confer courage, happiness and a sense of security.
So I think that was the end of the discourse. Swami concluded that discourse with that clip. And so very clear what Swami expects of students of these days. And, you know, be it Swami's students or be it anybody, any devotee who is in that level of a student, what are we supposed to graduate with? You know, so beautifully Swami is describing in that clip, especially when Swami is talking about so much of distrust and so much of fear in society. And if you can remove that, you know, that will be the most the best service that you could do to society.
And the onus, like Swami is clearly placing on the youth. He says, so much responsibility lies with the youth, that because these are the people with the ideals, and who not become cynical, who not perished, that idealism is not perished in them. And to channelize that in the right direction. So nowadays what happens is, yes, the youth have ideals in them, and yes, they are frustrated when they see that the actual world is like very much short of ideal.
Right.
But we are not taking the rest of society along with us. We fight society in order to bring those ideals back. And that's why Swami is emphasizing so much on this humility and respect for elders.
Right.
And a lot of us question, the elders are doing it wrong. But you stand even less chance if you go and fight with the elder rather than speak, in a humble fashion to them. Like that's a personal learning for me, and I'm pretty sure, it is something that the youth needs to
certainly understand. In fact, one of my teachers in college, they used to tell that when you read science, when you read especially research-oriented science, chemistry or physics, they would say it's very important to read the historical perspective too. You know, see the history of that subject. Yeah. Because that's the only way you will find out where people went wrong, why people missed seeing what you are seeing today, why what is obvious to you today was not obvious to them then.
True.
And that's when you will understand the progress, they've made.
Yeah.
And that's when humility will come. That's when, you might have a spark of intelligence by, to come up with a solution, or to come up, as you're saying, that idealism might be there. But it is also important to look back and see why it was not possible for them to live that way, or, bring that.
Yeah.
I think that's where humility becomes so very important.
Precisely.
That ability to see why it was not possible then.
Empathize,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you see, the violence in various parts of the world that we saw last week, it's almost, the youth who are right in the thick of it,
right?
And youth who... they say that when you spoke to that person, you almost had no inkling that such a monster was lurking within.
Right, right.
And so this is the message that, we need to get across to the youth.
Right.
The right kind of living. Mm-hmm. And somehow in the present education, system of education, we are able to convey practically everything else. We are teaching them to code, we are teaching them to decode, and I don't know what else. But the actual mysteries of life, like how to lead a life, and that is not being taught at all. Nor are there ideals who teach, nor are there... Nor is it being taught, at least, you know, as part of the syllabus.
And this thing which Swami was talking in the earlier part of the discourse, where Swami was talking about excessive talk, you know, when it comes to heroism and talk, I think that is something which, not pointing your fingers at you, you know, pointing your fingers at ourselves. You know, when we learn something or when we have come to know something, that desire to express and share it, that I have come to know it, I know it. You know, especially given the space that social media is creating and the you know, the opportunity it gives for you to share your ideas, we are, you know, more than completing the knowledge comprehensively or completing the understanding comprehensively, we are already at sharing. You know, I've learned this, I've understood this. I mean, as I said, it's just looking at oneself you can understand that, how that has become increasingly the case now.
Yeah, true. Because I, you know, even as Swami was, I was listening to what Swami was saying, my mind instantly went to, in how many conversations I myself have the tendency
exactly all
to,
of us, you know,
to add to the thinking. Conversation with something that I know.
Right.
And I just began to puzzle, like, maybe did I learn anything from the conversation, or did I just, you know, just speak?
Right.
Is, did any learning happen? And immediately the next sentence Swami said is that argument is detrimental to learning. So it just, you know, immediately struck so hard that in many conversations we are not using it as an opportunity to learn, rather we use it as an opportunity to just, you know, show off, that impress people with what
that,
we know.
That patience to, you know, understand the situation. In fact, you're talking about the unrest around, which is triggered by the youth. For instance, you know, in the Arab Spring, they called, and many of these countries, the revolution was very quick, as we're saying, because of the ability which the youth had to communicate with each other, in spite of all the restrictions and all that, and the simmering unrest which was always there, which took shape when a revolution happened. But because there was no time spent in understanding the problem really, after the revolution there was a collapse. You know, most of the time there was a disintegration after, you know, overthrowing a regime or overthrowing the status quo. Nobody had any clue of what is to be done now. I mean, everybody knew that what was happening was wrong, but hardly anybody had a solution because nobody had spent time to understand why that situation had come to be.
Precisely. The foundation of the entire rebellion was so shaky.
Right.
It was merely out of frustration, out of anger, rather than any desire to take things forward. Right. So, you know, even going back to this, I was reminded of something that is very important in the practice of Zen. They say that a master, like, even when he is speaking to a student, he still reminds himself that he has to be in a state called the beginner's mind.
Okay.
So in the sense that if, say, I know a lot of things about a particular subject, but when another person speaks about it, like, I must train myself in such a way that I'm hearing it for the very first time.
Okay.
You know, that I set aside practically everything that I know about it, and what if I'm listening to this for the very first time in my life, and I'm discovering these things anew, right? So they train themselves that way. It's called the beginner's mind, right? And Swami brings it about so beautifully. You know, he says that this is the way, right? It doesn't matter, and you're a student for life. I actually remember one of my classmates. This was the what we call as a gratitude program, right? We don't call it the farewell program. So the gratitude program at the conclusion of our MBA. I remember my classmate, in his speech, he said, and at the end of our education, and Swami made such a mocking gesture, no? The education is ended, but then he reminded us, he said, no, it is on for life. You are students for life. Right? So that, because it's not just true for, you know, when you say students, it's not just true for the youth, but I think, like, this, whatever age you can, to keep your mind fresh, I think the only way you can is to have this beginner's mind. Otherwise, you're stuck in concepts, you're stuck in your beliefs.
And it has to be done consciously. You know, many times I see that when I'm in a conversation with somebody, you know, the mind is so actively trying to contribute to that conversation.
Yeah, and not receive.
You have to literally tell your mind, you know, keep quiet and listen now. Listen. Yeah. Because I remember hearing one talk. Mm. That was the first talk in a series of four, I think. There was a inspirational speaker who was speaking. And the first talk was all about listening.
Yeah.
Listening. He said, because if you don't learn this art, yeah, there's no point you coming for the rest of the sessions.
Right.
Because it's only going to be, you know, like a flush. It's going to hit you and it's going to go. Yeah. You would not have picked up anything.
Yeah.
So he said, the first and foremost thing is the art of listening. And humility is so very important, mm, you know, for that. And it's important before education and after education, as Swami says.
Mm.
You know, to receive knowledge, you need humility. Mm. And humility will also be the expression of knowledge also.
Right.
And even when you acquire knowledge, Swami says that, you know, the beautiful example that Swami says of a plantain leaf on which food has been served will not fly.
Yeah.
And we know the difficulty of keeping a plantain leaf which is empty, you know, on the floor till the food comes to us.
Yeah. You know, a physicist actually, he does mention this. He says that when you've, somebody asked him, so you're almost at the fringe of science, like, you know, cosmology, you know, one of the toughest, you can apply quantum mechanics to cosmology. Mm-hmm. And so, are you not filled with a sense of pride, you know, but we see such humility in you. He says when you're standing there, that's when you realize that the ocean of knowledge is so vast.
Right.
That the, it seems very foolish to have even a smite of pride that you know so much,
right,
because it spreads out. You know all the more that you don't know.
And that's what they say. You know, the most absurd statement of the millennia. Yeah, I think in the 1800, one of the physicists said that all that has to be known in physics has already been known. And no idea that, you know, Albert Einstein and his gang were coming by with a concept of quantum. But you know, that's what it is. The very reason that we are looking back at it as a stupid statement is, in the hindsight, with the knowledge that we have today, it looks so absurd. And that's what will happen to every one of the statements which you make. You know, when you just look back and just recollect the arguments that you've had probably 5 years ago, or, you know, 10 years ago, you feel so, you know, I mean, was it really me who was doing that kind of an argument? I think that is what... It's all about you might not be in a position where you look back already, but the idea that I might be in a situation where I look back and I find myself absurd, and that alone can hold you back a bit, I think.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that we hold on to is our views, our opinions about things, right, as as them being right. And I recall there was one person who went up to the philosopher Bertrand Russell, speaking to him. And he asks him, like, would you die for your beliefs? And he says no. And the reason is why? Because they could be wrong. You know, in a intellectual giant like that, he has the humility to say that his beliefs could be wrong.
Right.
That's a good lesson for all of us.
Right? I think it was Einstein, right, when he was trying to teach maths to a little kid. And he said, you know, I've learned so much.
Yeah.
And as you're saying that, learner's mind, how far are we ready to take that? And I mean, how long are we ready to hold on to it? I think even if it falls off, it is going to happen so unconsciously.
Right.
There is no point where we can consciously say that I've learned all that I need to learn.
Precisely.
Right? You know, you will never know when that you've crossed that stage of being a learner.
True.
And of course, that beautiful poem that Swami said, you know, behind education there should always be wisdom, like the lightning behind the clouds.
Yeah.
And that pursuit should always be wisdom, and you know, not merely gathering.
Yeah.
And
somebody, you know, once it's a very funny way of putting it, but the distinction between knowledge and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, like, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And wisdom is not including it in your fruit salad.
Right.
It's a very fine balance, you know. You're not trying to show off or impress people with what you know.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have all these fun facts always which comes, you know, banana is a berry, strawberry is a fruit, is not a berry.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the wisdom is, of course, knowing what to do with what. It's a very, very beautiful analogy, you know.
Yes.
Where to apply your knowledge.
Precisely, yeah.
And where...
And how.
And we see that every day, how we misquote things which Swami says, and we take Swami's message is out of context and the confusion that leads to. And the second part of that discourse which you played was Swami speaking about the role we play in society. We spoke about that. And this overbearing idea of, you know, the Swami's definition of culture.
Yeah.
We started off with that first discourse, and almost every discourse, every Samukho series starts with a discourse where Swami defines culture. Swami would say culture is concern for others.
Right.
And you know, that is really running through the entire theme. I think I've mentioned this many times before. Our teachers who were students during the old Vrindavan days, you know, they used to go to the Bangalore University for their masters. They used to stay in the hostel, but they used to attend classes in Bangalore University. So that time the culture was still not whites all the time. Right? And they used to wear colors, and even Swami used to give them colored clothes. So one instruction which Swami would give them is, you know, dress in such a way that you are not too ostentatious that a simple man hesitates to come and approach you.
Right.
Okay. At the same time, don't dress so simply that a person who is, you know, in the higher strata of society hesitates to come and speak to you.
Right.
The ability to be approachable, and it comes from, you know, anybody might need help from you.
Yeah.
Right. And you making yourself available to people around you. No, Swami said, I mean, that's really breaking down the idea of culture and breaking down the idea of, you know, dressing or the way you carry yourself. The ability to be accessible to everybody.
Right.
And going forward in that discourse, Swami is talking about the scientists of today and the sages of the past. It's very interesting in the sense, like, you know, now when you look back, and especially the first few discourses which Swami gave here in this series, Swami spoke about how the human understanding has grun and what led to that growth in understanding from fear, and he starts understanding the elements and then starts looking behind the elements, what is driving the elements. And even in this discourse, you know, if that was natural science, this is biology. Swami is talking about the senses and looking behind the senses. And you know, one thing which you talk about, at least when I look at the way we have learned science because of the categorization of biology and science, we always look at science and study science as an observer. You know, we put ourselves outside science and we try to understand the forces of nature around you or the way things work. But one thing which you look at in the research of the rishis, if you could put it that way, is they never removed themselves from the research they were doing. You know, to understand what is happening within them was as important as to understand what is happening around them.
Yes.
Right? Not just the physical, biological part of it, but the entire understanding of who is asking the question, who wants to know. I mean, why doesn't that feature in our science? You know, when you're talking about wanting to know how things work. And we never stop to ask who wants to know how things work.
I remember the the summer course which you know, when I joined here, that was in the year 2000. The theme was of the summer course was educare, but Swami kept emphasizing one sentence. He said the proper study of mankind is man.
Right.
And even when we do our MBA here, the like the book that we all follow, right, Swami's collection of discourses, is titled Man Management, because Swami very clearly says that man is the greatest wealth or the resource for any company. And nowadays people more and more clear that it's primarily leadership or even management is all about managing the people.
Right.
So that's why Swami actually says, you know, we should learn this art of sahana bhavatu, sahano bhunaktu.
Right.
Like, how do we take people along with us? You know, how do we mingle with them? How do we learn, I mean, share our knowledge, share our wisdom and grow together? That is a challenge, because as human beings, as animals, as, you know, so to speak, right, this doesn't come, you know, it's not second nature to us.
Right.
It's something that we have to train ourselves in, right?
In fact, you know, we were talking to one of the Hyderabad youth, Dr. Veerabhadra, he was saying that Swami would tell them that if you come to me, if 10 of you come to me and say, Swami, each one of us have built a road, I'll be happy. But if 10 of you come to me and say, Swami, 10 of us together have built one road,
absolutely,
Swami said, I'll be very, very happy. Right? No, because he was saying that that's what the value that unity brings is much, much more important than quantity, right. Goswami, and that's what it is, sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunatu, as you're saying.
Yeah.
The ability to take others along in your understanding and your journey.
True, because a lot of people keep asking this question, like in you see this in Swami's organization, that a lot of the spiritual activities are in fact group activities.
Right.
And Swami used to emphasize it a lot, not to keep away from the individual sadhana, but Swami used to insist that bhajan should take place, the seva activity should take place, and you should participate in that, not in the isolation of your home.
Right.
And Swami was very clear that, you know, in your whatever understandings you glean from your meditations and your sadhana in isolation, they have to be tested in that lab called real world. Right? And the safe space where you could do this was, you
in
know,
a smaller
being,
group. Right.
Yeah, being out there in the group. Like that would nourish you to actually, you know, grow with that understanding. Right. Right,
so and the understanding that, you know, when, as you're saying, Swami always emphasized on group activity,
yeah,
but did not miss an opportunity to emphasize also that the relationship is always one to one.
Precisely.
Which means the task given out to you is to find solitude in a group.
Yes.
I mean, you can always find solitude in loneliness, but you have to find solitude and the ability to, you know, connect within in a group,
yeah,
and you'll be rewarded for that. You know, solitude rather than solitude that you find in the loneliness of your, you know, puja room or something like that.
Right, right.
And then Swami gives this this part of where Swami speaks about the Upanishads. And he said, we think that they are valueless. We don't realize that they are actually the ones which nourish the society. And in the earlier part of that discourse, Swami also says where these Mahavakyas of the Upanishads, you know, these nuggets of wisdom, they are like tablets.
Mm-hmm.
Which nourish you. I think it's a very, very beautiful and practical thing which we all can learn as youngsters. You know, if we ask, what are we to do, whether we understand it or not. I mean, now when we look back, that's what it appears.
You
know, whether we understood Swami's words or not, the very fact that we were constantly being drenched in that kind of wisdom, in that kind of higher knowledge, you can't resist it seeping into you.
Yes.
At some point it just does get in. As we were discussing those few couple of examples when we started the program, it's all about that, you know, unconsciously students picking up some qualities of Swami and some qualities which Swami spoke about.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something, add something here.
Sure.
You see, now when I look at some of these people who have been very fortunate to stay with Swami, say, let's take the present member secretary of the trust, Mr. Chakravarti.
Okay.
Oftentimes when you speak to him, you see that some of his gestures, some of his mannerisms are things that he has, you know, picked up being in association with Bhagwan for so many years.
Okay.
Right? You can almost see the same gestures and mannerisms mirrored, right? And you know, I was just thinking that how lucky we were all. You know, there's some, in the, so to speak, like this small speck of Bhagwan has entered each one of us merely by being around him, right? And because for most people in this world, the people they hold up as ideals are finally pretty ordinary mortals,
right?
And for us, we had this opportunity. See, nowadays children and or youth, right? So they look up to some actor or actress. They look up to them as being their ideals, and they try to imitate them in so many different ways, right? And that's how it goes on. This is what they pick up. But for us, we have the opportunity to look up to Bhagwan as our ideal, and when our thoughts keep running on Bhagwan, the way he was, what he says, right, when these things seep in, and that, I don't know if you realize, like, what good fortune that is.
It reminds me of what legendary actor Shivaji Ganeshan had said when he had come to see Swami, apparently. You know, he is one of those people who is probably object of that kind of adoration and adulation. People want to emulate him and keep him as an idol. Apparently, he was sitting for darshan and he saw the scene of the devotees coming and sitting and students coming and sitting in an orderly fashion, and the hall being filled with so much of silence. And he looked at it and apparently he turned to the person and he said, "You know, these are the heroes. Swami is creating ideals and heroes. You know, these are the people whom we have to look up to, the society has to look up to.
Yeah.
And Swami is day in and day out creating such people." And, you know, we don't realize it. It's so important, as Swami said in this discourse, that I am sending you all out as students. I'm, you know, investing in you this knowledge.
Yeah.
So that you will bring peace and security. You know, Abhayam, Swami was using that word so many times.
Hmm.
He said, there's so much of fear in the outside world.
True.
There's so much of insecurity.
True.
I want you to bring security and fearlessness in the world.
Hmm.
You know, that ray of hope. I mean, that can happen only if we, each one of us, choose to transform individually,
yeah,
not otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah, because these that word choice is very important. No?
Right,
like
right.
I think a few segments back, it was very clear. Like Swami was speaking about the use of discrimination, and
right.
that is something Swami always holds us accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
Like you cannot blame your circumstances. You cannot blame your upbringing. There's nothing that you can blame. Right?
Right.
A lot of people try to assign. You know, it's called the banality of evil, they say, right?
So right.
That, you know, perhaps he couldn't have behaved any differently, but ultimately in Swami's eyes, no. that is on,
I mean,
on you.
That's, in fact, there's a debate which was going on social media about some unrest in one part of the country where the youth were revolting and
yeah.
they taken to violence.
Yeah.
And one of these journalists had tweeted saying that, you know, there's so much of joblessness and the government is not doing enough,
yeah.
and that's why the young people are going to this kind of violence.
Mm.
And there was so much of backlash. You're saying that please stop legitimizing violence.
Mm.
That not having opportunities is never an excuse to take to violence.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's always, the choice is always there. You
True.
Cannot blame the situation around you, and the goodness is within to guide you. I mean, you don't
yes.
even need goodness around you to guide you.
Unless
goodness
you shut off that voice.
Exactly.
Yeah,
unless
stop
you
listening.
And the last sentence almost which Swami says is, Swami says, the Vice Chancellor asked me to speak on topics. That must have been one of the inaugural address of the Vice Chancellor for the Samukos itself, I think. Swami is saying that speak on topics which take us closer to
closer
God.
Closer to divinity.
And Swami says, and Upanishads is the best.
Yeah,
you know,
because the word Upanishad itself means
right,
precisely
right.
that, right?
To sit close to the Lord.
Sitting close to God. And that was happening
right.
like figuratively as well as physically.
Right. So I think we'll conclude with that. The
yeah.
discourse ends, and mostly next week we'll start the sixth discourse.
Right.
And so many practical things to pick up from the discourse. And that's the beautiful part of almost all of Swami's later parts of the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
You know? After the concluding remarks of the discourse
yeah.
will always be so practical. You know,
mm-hmm.
when we were talking about understanding the prana and the source for the prana and things
yeah.
like that, which was so abstruse, but finally Swami brings it down to so very easily applicable. You know, I can go out today and start practicing.
Yeah.
Swami talks about curbing excessive talk.
Mm.
Swami talks about unity. Swami talks about being of help to the people around.
Mm.
Swami talks about oneness in society and taking everybody along. I mean, all of this is so practical.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we would not have been able to come up with such a practical dilution, I mean, in the sense, not dilution, practical distillation of such esoteric wisdom. And
yes.
so seamlessly Swami has done it.
And I think we owe it to Bhagwan that we don't reduce like what he has said, his teachings, into mere concepts
right.
that we get fascinated by, that we can discuss.
right.
right. And because
that discussion is as harmful as argumentation, I guess.
Precisely. That the fag end, like Swami is very clear. He says like, today's people are heroes when it comes to talk, but zeros when it comes to action. So, like, you know, at the end of this, whatever we are doing over here, it's not meant for merely articulating that, you know, this is what we have learned. Right? It should show up,
right.
like, in what we do.
Right? As I always say, mm-hmm. we've called this program Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Shravanam Swami is enabled by allowing his voice to be recorded so we can over and over listen again.
Right.
Mananam is of course what we're trying to do,
yeah.
trying to look deeper and contemplate on Swami's message.
Yeah.
That Nididhyasanam part is always
yeah.
there to be taken forward, and we pray to Swami that it happens, and we offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet.
Right.
We'll conclude by playing the bhajan which Swami sang at the end of this discourse.
Mm.
So dear listeners, on the other side of this bhajan, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside Inside Deep Inside. Do join us again next week. We'll start the next discourse on behalf of Hari and on behalf of myself. Thank you for joining us. We'll meet you all next week. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Bhajan bina sukh shanti nahi.
Bhajan bina sukh.
భజన బినా సుఖ శాంతి నహీ. హరి నామ బినా ఆనంద నహీ. హరి నామ బినా ఆనంద నహీ. హరి భజన బినా శాంతి నహీ.